Tonight, former Attorney General Godfred Dammi descends on acting Chief Justice. He is accusing him of standing to gain the most from suspension and possible removal of Gertrude Torkornoo after the acting CJ joined two other judges to dismiss a suit challenging suspension of Madam Torkornoo as Chief Justice.
I find it quite intriguing that the acting Chief Justice himself will preside over the proceedings, and I find it very incongruous because indeed, if at all there's any beneficiary from all of these developments, it is the acting Chief Justice is a direct beneficiary of this. And it is incongruous in the constitutional history of this country. We've never seen any development like that before.
We have details as plenty of hints of pursuing a review of the court's decision.
Well, I don't think there's the end of the road. Of course, the 3-2 ruling suggests that the Supreme Court itself sees some reason in the arguments that we made.
And also on top story, did the reconstitution of the panel hearing the injunction application against the CJ suspension decide the case? We have details plus analysis here. On top story brought to you always by Telecel, connecting energies and holy insecticide spray and coil. Enjoy a holy sleep. Tonight, former Attorney General Godfred Dammi is taking on the acting Chief Justice Paul Bafo-Boni, accusing him of standing to benefit the most from the suspension and possible removal of the substantive Chief Justice Gertrude Abba Torkornoo. Justice Bafo-Boni today joined two other judges to dismiss the suit challenging the suspension of Madam Torkornoo as CJ. The former Attorney General is representing the plaintiff in the case. The Supreme Court, by a 3-2 decision, dismiss the injunction application filed by MP for Old Tafo. My colleague Latif Idris, who was in court for us, and joins me in studio with more details. Now, Latif, we understand there was a preliminary objection raised by the former Attorney General. Walk us through those.
Exactly. So there were two objections by Godfred Yeboah Dammi. One has to do with Justice Bafo-Boni joining the panel hearing the substantive matter. The objection by Godfred Yeboah Dammi was that Justice Bafo-Boni stands to benefit ultimately when this whole process is concluded.
Okay.
And if it ends up with Her Ladyship Justice Gertrude Torkornoo being removed from office as Chief Justice, the person who stands to benefit the most is Justice Bafo-Boni.
Okay.
And so he, as the acting Chief Justice, can therefore, in the words of Godfred Yeboah Dammi, put up a panel and then sit on that same panel, preside over that same panel to hear this particular matter that he, as an individual, stands to benefit at the end of the day. That was the first objection. That objection, there was a recess by the 5-member panel. When they came back, they delivered a verdict which was a unanimous dismissal, or they overruled that particular objection by Godfred Yeboah Dammi. That was one. The second objection has to do with the panel itself in its entirety. So the first panel, or the initial panel that first heard this particular matter, had different justices of the Supreme Court. Not entirely, but there were two of them that were absent today. They were Justice Poaman and Justice Asiedu. And you know that Justice Poaman and Justice Asiedu have been appointed by the president to investigate this particular issue regarding the allegations raised in the two petitions brought before the president to remove the Chief Justice from office.
Okay.
So, but Godfred Yeboah Dammi's point was that you can't have a different panel to hear the matter when we have a panel that had already started hearing it.
Okay.
There's inconsistency here. And so he objected to that particular panel. Again, the verdict came and they overruled that particular objection and said that this is a matter of reconstitution of the panel and they've not breached any law with regards to that particular scenario that played out in court.
Okay.
And so that was also cleared off the of the way.
Mm.
Then we saw the Attorney General subsequently withdrawing
Former Attorney General, you mean?
The former Attorney General, Godfrey Yeboah-Dame, withdrawing the application that sought to do what? Restrain the president from going through with the processes he has triggered that could potentially remove the Chief Justice from office.
Mm.
He withdrew it, and so the court also made a determination and a ruling that this has been withdrawn and then struck out by the court. So these three things were cleared of the way and then came to the substantive matter of the application regarding the suspension of the Chief Justice.
Okay, and how was the ruling on that one?
So on that particular one, there was arguments, a submission, copious one made by Godfrey Yeboah-Dame. His main contention was that right from the outset, the president committed a constitutional violation. He violated the constitutional right of the suspended Chief Justice when he failed to notify her about the two petitions he had received as president. In fact, it was the case of Godfrey Yeboah-Dame that the president received these two petitions, sat on the petitions for about 6 weeks before coming public with an announcement that there's been petitions against the suspended Chief Justice.
Mm-hmm.
It was the case of Godfrey Yeboah-Dame that failure by the president constitutes an egregious constitutional violation of the rights of the suspended Chief Justice. And so whatever had happened from then till date cannot be something to be classified as to remedy the violation that had taken place right from the outset.
Okay.
And so everything that had happened henceforth should be classified by the court as null and void.
Okay.
That was his prayer to the court. Then we saw Justice Ramsay also making the argument that there is no constitutional violation and that the president has given the petition to the Chief Justice. He gave her some 10 days to respond to the allegations that were made. The president has gone ahead to set up a committee that's going to investigate. And so there's been no constitutional violation as proposed or submitted by the former Attorney General Godfrey Yeboah-Dame. Justice Ramsay also made the point that in his submission, the former Attorney General was referencing newspaper publications because newspapers were publishing and stating that the judiciary is under attack. The former Attorney General is basing his submission or is using that as a hook to get the Supreme Court to make a declaration in the favor of his client.
Okay.
That was the submission of Justice Ramsay. Again, then came the verdict of a 3-2 majority decision that says that the application regarding the suspension of the president that sought to get the president to recall the warrant that he had issued to suspend the Chief Justice has been dismissed and thrown out by the court by a 3-2 decision. And we had a leadership Justice Henrietta Mensah-Bonsu and Gewu, they dissented.
Okay.
Right. Justice Amadu Tanko, the presiding judge, that is the acting Chief Justice Bafo Boni and Yuni Kolendi, all voted to dismiss the application regarding the suspension.
And what was the reaction of Godfrey Yeboah-Dame to that?
So Godfrey Yeboah-Dame insisted that, I mean, what had happened is out of this world, quote and unquote, and that this is historic. And he quoted some cases, similar cases that had happened in the 80s, and there had never been the case that an acting Chief Justice would sit on a matter such as this. He found it very intriguing.
I find it quite intriguing to start with that the acting Chief Justice himself will preside over the proceedings, and as I indicated, I find it very incongruous because indeed, if at all there's any beneficiary from all of these developments, it is acting Chief Justice is a direct beneficiary of this. Of course, it's a constitutional injunction for him to act as the next most senior, but clearly, we cannot lose sight of the fact that whatever has happened in the Philippines of that question. And it is in Congress, in the constitutional history of this country, we've never seen any development like that before. Whenever there has been a dispute as to the status of the Chief Justice in this country, start from 1980 to an Attorney General, start from 1983, 94, Aban, and we go to 2005, there about J2 Menor, the Chief Justice in question, a panel report, but never sat on the matter. I mean, so it cannot be right for the Attorney General to say so the matter. But that's it. We see the 3-2 ruling, very narrow decision. We wait for the reasons. When the reasons come, we definitely advise ourselves. The narrowness of the decision itself indicates clearly that the application, no doubt, had merit and will know what to do. Right?
Your main argument, your final word, was the fact that the president's failure to notify the Chief Justice from the outset constitutes an egregious constitutional violation. But one of the panel members pressed you. He wanted you to point the panel to the clause in Article 146 clearly stipulates the timeline.
The reasons for the decision have not been known. Of course, clearly, I mean, the spirit of Article 146 we're talking about. In the first place, it is important to indicate that nowhere in Article 146 will you find the requirement for criminal facie intimation made for a Chief Justice. But the Supreme Court itself imported that into Article 146 in 2005 when it adjudicated on the adjudicative matter. But of course, the Supreme Court was silent on whether there ought to be notification to a Chief Justice and obtaining of his comment before triggering the process. And that is what is in this week before the court. My contention is that natural justice, all the rules of constitutionalism and all, will require that there ought to be such process.
Well, so, I mean, that, you know, was the former Attorney General. But is this the end of the road for the plaintiff, which was the MP for Otafo?
So even if you catch what the former Attorney General was saying, he said they will look at and the closeness of the verdict, of the ruling, the decision by the panel is that close, and so they will look at it and advise themselves. When I caught up with Vincent Asefua, he also made similar comment that indeed early days yet they will wait on the 21st of May when the full judgment is made available. They will look at it and take a clue on what to do next.
Well, I don't think there's the end of the road, but let's just get the reasoning first. When you get the reasoning, of course, the 3-2 ruling suggests that the Supreme Court itself sees some reasoning in the arguments that we made in court. It tells you that argument or the reasoning that we advanced in court was quite potent. And so let's get the reasoning, and when we're able to get the reasoning, we'll be able to decide what we intend to do after assessing the reasoning.
What do you make of the fact that your counsel couldn't point out to the provision that clearly states timeline within which the Chief Justice has to be notified upon receipt of the petition by the President? Does that, how damaging was that to your case?
Well, I was even surprised that it even came up, because Tufo versus Attorney General clearly tells you that in reading the Constitution, you have to do so by the letter and the spirit. If anybody tells you that because something has not been clearly stated in the Constitution, for that matter, it has no potency, I am telling you that that is not the case. In fact, even today, the Interpretation Act of Ghana tells you that you have to read the Constitution purposively. Purposively means that the letter and the context is very much important. It is on that basis that even the Ajaytun case, where a prima facie that will have to be established in the case of a Chief Justice, which has not been stated clearly in the Constitution, Ajaytun said that we have to establish a prima facie. So if anybody tells you that something will have to be stated in the Constitution before some potential have to be given to it, I don't think that is the law. Let's wait for the reasoning and see what we can do.
Are you disappointed with the
judge? I disagree.
So he says he disagrees there, and we'll wait to see the next line of action he will take.
Exactly.
But, I mean, you caught up with the Deputy Attorney General after the judgment was delivered, right?
Yeah, clearly elated with the judgment of the Supreme Court. And he reiterated the point he had made in open court, that the former Attorney General came to court on, quote-unquote, fishing expedition, if you like. and that he was quoting newspaper publication to make a case, and so he wasn't necessarily quoting the law.
Attorney General has filed on behalf of Honorable Asik. Today you notice that even injunction, they had two injunctions on their record. And they were asked, when they were asked, they quickly withdrew one and allowed on the other, which is clearly an abuse of the court process. To keep filing processes with the hope that one of them will stand is really not a good practice for a lawyer to do. And that is what happened. And as you follow the argument, the court have been insisting that what exactly is your concern? The right to claim to have been abused actually have not been abused because the Chief Justice was given a hearing. And there's no legal provision which dictates what time in the process the hearing should be. So if you ask me, everything shows that there is basically the application stand on no solid ground. And that is why I agree with the court that this is not the right way to do it. Yes, we are yet to see the reason. We are yet to see the reason. So when we see the reasoning, of course, then we will know whether the court, those who dissented, the justices who dissented, were dissenting because there was any basis for this. And there are so many reasons why the court would dissent. But you were in court and you realize that the question was consistently put. What exactly are you alleging? What is the right that you are alleging? And you know, to pile up a series of newspaper publications claiming that because newspapers have published that the president is attacking the judiciary, that is enough for the president to stop the process. So the process is unconstitutional because some newspapers are published. That cannot be a very strong legal basis. And you saw the attachments of newspaper publications, many of them. I don't think that a publication is a legal right or determines the legal right for anyone.
All right, so this is a top story brought to you by Telecel Connecting Energies and Holy Insecticide Spray and Coil. Let's bring in Mr. Kweku Ansari. He is former director of the Ghana School of Law. I'm grateful to you, sir, for joining us here. Now, you've listened to the processes. I'm sure you followed how the things went out in court. Your thought on what happened in court today?
Yeah, thank you very much. It has been a jurisprudence day in court. You know, today, listening to the arguments and then in front of court and, you know, hearing what is being said, you know, on air. I think that it's all, you know, well and good for the development of jurisprudence on the CJ removal process. First of all, the unanimous verdict or considered opinion of the five justices who felt that there was nothing wrong with the acting chief justice sitting on the case. Mm-hmm. Have merely followed precedent because since the 1992 constitution came into force, the Supreme Court has decided that when it comes to picking and choosing those to constitute the Supreme Court for the execution of his business, the Chief Justice shall have the most say. And this has been so since Kofi Kwenyenya and three others, that's the Ghana Bar Association versus Chief Justice Alban. That has been, you know, the precedent. And that precedent has been, you know, followed in other cases, including by Takwete and Ajay Chum. So that accords well with precedent, and therefore,
but isn't this
well and good?
Isn't this different if the Chief Justice does not return, then it goes in favor of the acting Chief Justice because he will continue to act as a Chief Justice?
Well, the framers of the Constitution thought carefully about all the issues you have raised, you know, since the ruling, you know, this morning. They thought carefully about that, you know, and thought that nevertheless, you know, the incumbent or substantive Chief Justice or the acting you know, should have the power to empanel, and that power, you know, can include the office holder. So there's nothing wrong. If that was what, in the wisdom or the framers of the Constitution, they thought desirable for the nation, you know, no one can you know, take it away from them. They've decided, and it's in the Constitution and being followed. So once we are honoring, you know, or observing, you know, the nuances of the Constitution, you know, I think it is right, you know, for the whole nation. It's good for democracy. It's good for the rule of law, and it's also good for the administration of justice.
And once we are thinking about reviewing the Constitution, does this play up a situation where we have to take a look at this to prescribe exactly what should happen if such a circumstance should arise again in the future?
I think it shouldn't be written into the Constitution. That would be boxing ourselves into a tight corner. As I said on one of your shows this morning, there's a doctrine, you know, called the doctrine of necessity, that it shall, you know, become expedient on an occasion for the head to be part of it. Removing the head, you know, who is imbued with constitutional wisdom, with the nuances of, you know, administration of justice and all that, you know, merely because the person stands, all the justices of the Supreme Court stand to benefit, you know, from the removal of the Chief Justice, all of them. I'll not say the number one, all of them. Once you are a justice of the Supreme Court, you know, you qualify for, you are eligible for consideration to the top job. Even if in the wisdom of the president, he decides to pick someone from the high court, because the person is a member of the superior court, the president may be justified. The only aberration is that it will be out of, you know, tune with the constitutional framework, that, you know, you leave it to the most senior justice of the Supreme Court. So it will be in consonance with that at Article 144, you know, clause 4, the appointment of the. But when it comes to the removal, you know, it's a different ballgame.
I would rather suggest
that stringent measures are put in place for the removal of the CJ, just as we have for the president and the speaker, rather than, you know, take away the administrative, you know, function of the incumbent or the person, you know, who finds himself acting.
If you say stringent measures, exactly what do you mean?
Well, I mean, take a look at the impeachment process of the president. You see that it has been couched, you know, in such formidable terms that it is near to impossible to remove the president of the republic. Similarly, when it comes to the removal of the speaker, yeah, I mean, how do you get 75% of the MPs to remove their speaker? It's a tough job. But when it comes to the CJ, it is a petition, and then it is submitted to the president, then to Council of State, then, you know, a consultation, then a committee is set up, a prima facie case. Mind you, when a committee is set up, it does not mean that the prima facie case, you know, necessarily means a final determination. Prima facie merely means that, you know,
there's a case to answer.
It looks like, you know, so at that stage, the merits of the petition have not been gone into yet. So it's a superficial. So that is how come the previous petitions have all failed. You see, and I believe that we should allow this, you know, one to see, you know, the light of day. Okay. And then once, you know, a verdict is pronounced, if it succeeds, fair enough. Okay. If it fails, fair enough. Why do we hold it?
Thank you very much.
Is it to please, you know, the parties? No.
Okay.
Let's be careful.
I'm grateful to you for joining us here on Top Story. Let me bring in Lawyer Vincent Asifua. He is a member of Parliament for Tafu. He is the plaintiff in this particular case. I'm grateful to you, sir. But you say that you are weighing your options to whether, continue this case or not. But why don't you allow the processes to follow through for us to know what exactly will come out of this petition hearing by the committee?
Hello.
Yeah, Vincent. I'm trying to find out from you. You've alerted that it's possible you are not letting this go the way it is.
Hello.
Vincent, can you hear me?
Hello.
Vincent.
Yes, I can hear you now.
Good. So I want to find out from you that you've created an impression that you are not letting this go, right?
Well, those are your words. I have a constitutional right to go to the Supreme Court to seek for interpretation, or if you like, to exercise my constitutional right anytime that I feel, or in my understanding that the Constitution has been turned down, or if you like, something untoward has been done to the Constitution. The same Constitution also mandates that in the event that the Supreme Court has ruled, or if like given a judgment on a matter, such a ruling can have a review, or put differently, the Supreme Court can review its own decision. And so it is my belief that on the 21st of May, when I have the full complement of the ruling in terms of the reasoning or the rationale behind the 3-2 by the Supreme Court, then I will decide whether to have a review of it or otherwise.
Do you feel the recomposition played a role here?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I do not think that it just happened just like that. To have three judges reintroduced to the panel, only for those three judges to vote against the application. And so I don't know why it happened that way, but as I've always been saying, it can be that whatever decision that the Supreme Court is given is constitutional and is legal. But if it is not seen to be just and fair, then that's the problem.
But what is not just and fair about this?
Well, you just asked me as to the basis for you to ask me why, if the three judges or the three justices of the Supreme Court, who was reintroduced into the new panel, played a role or not, what will make you ask that? The reason that will make you ask that question is because in your mind, in your deepest of hearts, you know that they played a role.
Well, but the president is following due process. Why do you have an issue with it?
Well, I don't think the president is following due process. The due process should be, or ought to be, that when a petition is received, before you trigger any procedure or any process, please give the petition to the Chief Justice for her responses first and foremost. Without that, there is a procedural impropriety that needs to be cured. And it is on that basis that we are in court, that such a procedural impropriety will have to be cured.
But she was given the opportunity to add her responses to the petition.
So it cannot be said that it has been remedied by the fact that she was given an opportunity to respond to it. There has been a breach, which breach goes into the root of the matter. It is my respective submission that, yes, it was remedied, but a procedural breach has occurred.
I'm grateful to you, lawyer, Vincent Asifo, for joining us. He is the plaintiff in this particular case. This has been Top Story, brought to you by Telecel Connecting Energies and Holy Insecticide Spray and Coil. Enjoy a holy sleep. Up next is Newsnight.